Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 73, which is titled Lord Krishna Blesses Liberated Kings. I think text 8's written up there, but we finished with text 6 yesterday, so let's read text 7 and we'll chant text 8. Text 7, Krishna Sandarshana Lada Dvashta Samrodna Klama Prashamam Su Hrishikesham Gibi Pranjalayo Nripa. The ecstasy, translation, the ecstasy of beholding Lord Krishna, having dispelled the weariness of their imprisonment, the king stood with joined palms and offered words of praise to that supreme master of the senses. Text 8. Rajana Uchuhu. Namaste Deva Devesha.
Namaste Deva Devesha.
Prapanati Haravyaya.
Prapanati Haravyaya.
Prapanan Pahina Krishna.
Prapanan Pahina Krishna.
Nivinan Gora Samsrite.
Nivinan Gora Samsrite.
Rajana Uchuhu.
Rajana
Namaste Deva Devesha.
Namaste Deva Devesha.
Prapanati Haravyaya.
Prapanati Haravyaya.
Prapanam Pahina Krishna.
Prapanam Pahina Krishna.
Nivinan Gora Samsrite.
Nivinan Gora Samsrite.
Rajana Uchahu.
Rajana Uchahu.
Namaste Deva Devesha.
Namaste Deva Devesha.
Prapanati Haravyaya.
Prapanati Haravyaya.
Prapanam Pahina Krishna.
Prapanam Pahina Krishna.
Nivinan Gora Samsrite.
Nivinan Gora Samsrite.
Rajanuchu.
Namaste
Deva Devesha. Prapanati Haravyaya. Prapanam Pahina Krishna. Nivinan Gora Samsrite. Rajana Uchahu.
Namaste Deva Devesha.
Prapanati Haravyaya. Prapanam Pahina Krishna. Nirinam Gora Samsrite. Rajana Uchahu.
Namaste
Deva Devesha. Prapanati Haravyaya. Prapanam Pahina Krishna. Nivinan Gora Samsrite. Marajis. Rajana Uchahu. Namaste Deva Devesha. Prapanati Haravyaya. Prapanam Pahina Krishna. Nivinan Gora Samsrite. Rajana Uchahu. The king said. Namaha. Obeisances. Te. To you. Deva. Of the demigods. Deva. Of the lords. Isha, O Supreme Lord, Prapana, of those who are surrendered, Ati, of the distress, Hara, O Remover, Avyaya, O Inexhaustible One, Prapanam, surrendered, Pahi, please save, Na, us, Krishna, O Krishna, Nivinan, despondent, Gora, terrible. Samsrite, from material existence. Translation and purport was fixed as a purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, Lord Prabhupada. Translation, the king said, obeisances to you, O Lord, of the ruling demigods, O destroyer of your surrendered devotees' distress. Since we have surrendered to you, O inexhaustible Krishna, please save us from this terrible material life, which has made us so despondent. Interesting glorification there of Krishna, inexhaustible. So we may have a friend, but they are always exhaustible. We can only demand so much from our friends. So they've only got so much time, so much money. All jivas are kind of limited like that. But if they're tapped into Krishna, Krishna is inexhaustible. It's always interesting to study the way Krishna is glorified, inexhaustible. Because we're always looking for friends, so people who can help us, but they're always exhaustible, the material. But Krishna is inexhaustible. O destroyer of your surrendered devotees' distress. So surrendered devotees' distress goes away, but devotees are not completely surrendered, then some distress has to be undergone. O Lord of the ruling demigods. Isn't it? We're not fully surrendered, therefore we have to undergo some distress. O Lord of the ruling demigods. So powerful. The demigods are powerful, but he is the Lord of even the very powerful. Very powerful demigods. Demigods are the most powerful persons in the universe. You may think the Prime Minister or the President is very powerful, but he is only very smally powerful in a very small way. Demigods are very powerful in the universe. But Krishna is their Lord. So that everybody is very afraid of death, isn't it? Automatically, if somebody goes and walks in here with a gun, everyone's going to be terrified. If a crazy person walks in with a gun, we're going to be terrified. Everyone's afraid of death. But the Lord of death himself, Yamaraj, he's afraid of Krishna. He's afraid of disobeying Krishna's orders. Krishna's ordered him to be the Lord of death. And it's not a very pleasant duty, because he has to reward the good souls and punish the impious souls. But generally, souls are impious, so he spends most of his time punishing people. So it's not a very pleasant job, but he's carrying out his job under the order of he's afraid if he doesn't follow out his job, he'll be punished by the Supreme Lord, by the Supreme Lord's energies. So everybody's afraid of death, but the Lord of death himself is afraid of Krishna. So Krishna is the Lord of the ruling demigods, which Yamaraj is one demigod. It's always interesting, even though there's no purport to this, it's interesting to see the way Krishna is glorified. You understand the glories of Krishna by studying the language that's used. Text 9. Nainam nata nushayamo magadam madhusudana anugraho yad bhavato rajnan raja chuti vibho. O Master Madhusudana, we do not blame this king of Magadha, since it is actually by your mercy that kings fall from their royal position, O Almighty Lord. Purport. It is significant that upon seeing Lord Krishna, and thus becoming purified of their sins, the kings did not feel any mundane hatred or bitterness towards Jarasandha. So Jarasandha's imprisoned them, taken away all their wealth and property, and hasn't given them any clothes, and barely given them enough to eat, so they're practically dying of hunger. But they don't feel any hatred towards Jarasandha. This is a very advanced level, because yesterday someone was asking at the end of class, oh, how do you deal with when devotees mistreat you? Well, here you see the kings, they didn't feel any hatred to Jarasandha, even though he'd imprisoned them, taken away all their property, and hadn't fed them. Though the kings are used to a high standard of enjoyment, a lot of respect. But if a prisoner gets the opposite, the prisoner gets no respect, the prison guards tell him what to do. Simply by seeing Lord Krishna, the kings came to the position of Krishna consciousness and spoke these verses, which show deep spiritual wisdom. So, these kings are an example of Krishna's special mercy. The general mercy we don't have too many objections to. If somebody gives us a new book, a book on Krishna consciousness, or we go to the back of the kitchen, the chinchwami gives us samosa, we don't have any objections to the general mercy. Or a Sunday feast is put in front of us. The general mercy, or someone gives us a garland. The general mercy we're very happy with. The special mercy is when Krishna takes everything away and then we have to fully surrender. So the general mercy we generally like. As devotees we like it, because the demons may not even like the general mercy. So we try to give them a book and they may abuse us. The devotees generally like the general mercy, but we don't like the special mercy where everything gets taken away. And we see that in the lives of many devotees that everything actually is taken away. So with Srila Prabhupada, he was trying to do business, but he was cheated, and some of the people in the business were stealing the money, and then business conditions turned down, and gradually his business began to fail, and began to lose money. And then when he couldn't bring in his money, then his family members became less interested in him, which is generally the way. Somebody thinks, I'm providing for my family, but when they stop providing for the family, they become old, then the family lose interest in them, because the family members there have their self-interest at heart. Then his wife wanted some tea biscuits, so she sold his Bhagavad Gita, wasn't it? So he was left without his Bhagavatam. So he's left without his Bhagavatam. And so his books are taken away. His wife is disinterested in him and his activities, his preaching activities. So this is the special mercy where Srila Prabhupada could say, this is all Krishna's arrangement to make me fully dedicate my life to preaching, fully dedicate my life to preaching consciousness. This is Krishna's arrangement that I get relief from my family responsibilities and then can fully dedicate myself to preaching activities. This is a special mercy. So we see the kings here also getting this special mercy where they're deprived of their position, deprived of their wealth, in fact even thrown in prison and fed in a very miserly sort of way and not given new clothes like that. So, but they consider it the special mercy of Krishna. They're looking at it from the higher viewpoint that this is actually the special mercy of Krishna. Krishna is taking everything away. So we see that even if very highly advanced souls like Srila Prabhupada have the carpet pulled out from under their feet, so to speak, we can't expect that just as ordinary devotees that we won't have times in Krishna consciousness where we won't also experience some difficulties and which require us to go deeper into our surrender. So the kings, they didn't blame the king of Magadha. Nowadays everybody likes to blame somebody else. My trouble is, my troubles are caused by everybody else. Was caused because my mother didn't love me, and my father, he left home, and then I went to school and the teachers abused me, and so on and so forth. And then you have the whole litigation system where people sue because this one let them down, that one let them down. The kings here, they're not interested in suing the king of Magadha. They're not interested in suing Jarasandha. They don't even feel any hatred towards him. Actually, Jarasandha's an interesting case himself. Jarasandha, he was the king of Magadha, and he married his daughters to Kamsa. And then, of course, Krishna killed Kamsa. So then, because Krishna killed Kamsa, he developed a hatred, and his daughters came back to his palace and said, Krishna has killed our husband. So then, because of this, he developed a hatred for Krishna, although he may have already been an enemy of Krishna, then he developed a hatred for Krishna. Although he preached to his daughters very nice philosophy. Also, when Shishupal, he was defeated by Krishna 17 times. 17 times he went with his army to battle with Krishna. And Krishna defeated him, wiped out his whole army, didn't even leave him in his chariot, left him only with his life, so he had to walk away in disgrace. So 17 times he was defeated by Krishna. Then the 18th time, then Krishna just disappeared. He ran away and created this the city of Dwarka after running away. Jarasandha pursued him, but then he went to a mountain and he hid in the mountain, and Jarasandha burnt the mountain down. He thought that Krishna had been killed. But then later on, at Rukmini's marriage, she wanted to marry Krishna, and most of her family agreed with that proposal, except her brother Rukmi. He wanted her to marry Shishupal. So when the proposed marriage, when Rukmini was going to marry Shishupal, then Krishna turned up and he defeated all the warriors, including Jarasandha and Shishupal. So at that time, Jarasandha, he was defeated by Krishna 17 times. The 18th time Krishna ran away, and then the 19th time he battled with Krishna, Krishna again defeated him like that. So in the previous chapter when he said, oh Krishna, you are a coward, that's not a very accurate description, because actually Krishna defeated him 17 times and let him escape with his life, although destroying all his army and even his chariot, destroying his army and property, his wealth, but allowing him to escape with his life. And then the 18th time Krishna ran away, and the 19th time Krishna battled with Jarasandha, then Krishna defeated him. So at that time, Shishupal, he was very morose. He thought he was going to marry the beautiful Rukmini, and he returned to the kingdom. And then Jarasandha, he preached to him because he was very demoralised. So sometimes even demonic persons, they become interested in philosophy when things don't go their way. They also might need cheering up. And so obviously demons' plans are frequently going to be foiled because they don't believe in that the results of activities are based on piety. Jarasandha, he preached to Shishupal. He said that everyone's under control of destiny and karma. Just look at me. 17 times I went to battle Krishna, and time and destiny were on Krishna's side. Then the 18th time I went to beat him, and he ran away in fear. So then time and destiny were on my behind. So now Krishna has defeated you, but in the future you'll get a chance to defeat Krishna. So he preached like this. Jarasandha, he preached like this to Shishupal. So he knew something of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness anyway, and this is also a vision of us as aspiring devotees, we know something of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. But we know at the next moment then he was planning again to cause some trouble to Krishna's devotees. And so we see it's often with these demons like Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, Karna, they know the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but they don't act upon it. So Hiranyakashipu, also when his brother Hiranyaksha was killed by Ravana, then he returned to his palace, and his mother was morose because she lost her son, and Hiranyaksha's wife was morose because they'd lost their husband, like that. But then he started preaching the very philosophy that in this life we're all just like residents in a hotel. We come, family members are like residents in a hotel, they come together for some time and then they disperse, go their different directions. So he also knew this idea, but then the next moment he went out and thought, well, I have some plan to become immortal, so it won't happen to me. My brother's been killed by Lord Vishnu. Maybe make some plan to become immortal. So we can sit here, we can listen to the Bhagavatam class, but then when we get outside, we have to actually practice it. Because we see there's demons like Hiranyakashipu, Ravana. Ravana was also very knowledgeable in the Vedas. He could speak very eloquently on the Vedas. He was the son of Vrishabha Muni, who was a very great rishi. So from his father, he learned all the Vedas. So he's also very expert in the Vedas. But he also was opposed to the plan of the Supreme Lord. So Karna also, he understood that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of God. And Krishna went before him on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Before the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna went before him. And he explained to Karna, actually, you're Yudhisthira's older brother. You should come and fight with your brothers. They will let you be the king, because Yudhisthira will never be the king of his older brother. You should come and fight with your brothers. And so Karna said, yes, I understand you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that, you know, I'm going to be killed at Kurukshetra, but I can never give up my friendship with Duryodhana. He said, Duryodhana has made me a king, and even if I fight on the side of my brothers and I become the king, I won't be happy because Duryodhana will be killed, and people will say, I just did it because I want to be the king myself. So he gave so many reasons for not following the instruction advice of Lord Krishna. So we may recognise Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we may know something of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but the challenge is always there to be able to carry it out. So sometimes they say of a Christian person, somebody may die and they say that they may notice he's involved in all kinds of vice and corruption and criminality during his life. And they say, but he used to go to church on Sundays. They have a saying that, oh, he left his Christianity at the door of the church. So we don't want to leave our Krishna consciousness at the door of the temple. We go outside and we do all kinds of different activities after hearing the Bhagavatam class and being able to speak all kinds of eloquent philosophy. But we leave our Krishna consciousness at the door of the temple. We go out and we do something different. So the Christians, they say, oh, he left his Christianity at the door of the church. So he went to church, he was pious right now, but then when you get out, he did all kinds of nonsense activities. So we don't want to be like that in our practice of Krishna consciousness. So Jarasandha, he was subsequently killed by Bhimasen. He wouldn't fight with Krishna, he said Krishna was a coward, although Krishna had defeated him 18 times, and only one time he'd run away from the battle. So this is the position of demon. Demon remains inimical to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even when given good instruction, even though he may know something of Vedic understanding. So that choice is always there. We see in the case of Jarasandha, he was defeated by Krishna, had his army destroyed, killed, lost his wealth, lost even his chariot. But still he didn't surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here these kings, they've been imprisoned by Jarasandha, and they've learned from this to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is all the choice is always there. We're talking in class on Sunday that with Vani Ribhubu was giving the class, and how Bali Maharaj, he was also charitable, and then when Krishna appeared before him and asked for charity, Krishna appeared as Lord Valmadev, he asked for charity. He asked for 3 paces of land, and Bali Maharaj said to him, you're not very, because Jagvarna was just a dwarf, so a dwarf can't be expected to make very big steps. So he said, you're not very intelligent. I'm the master of the three worlds. I can give you all kinds of wealth and facilities. I can give you a beautiful wife, I can give you a beautiful palace, and you're asking for 3 paces of land. You're just a short guy anyway, you're just a shorty anyway. Like that. So Bali Maharaj said to him, you're not very intelligent. And Lord Vamanadeva, he preached back to him. He said, well, if I'm not happy with 3 paces of land, I won't be happy with the three worlds. Just give me 3 paces of land. So this way there's a humorous exchange between Bali Maharaj and Lord Vamanadeva. But in Sukhachara, he could understand that that this Vamanadeva was not actually just a little dwarf, some guy who had some genetic disorder and was very short, he could understand that this is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he said, you fool, you rascal, you didn't consult me. This guy's asking for 3 paces of land and he's going to take away everything. And then when he takes away everything, how are you going to maintain me? So this is his actual motivation. But sometimes people speak learned philosophy, but underneath it there's some personal motivation. So Sukracharya would then explain to him, charity that endangers livelihood is never recommended by the Shastra. He was explaining all kinds of philosophy. But the motivation was that if you lose all your wealth, then you won't be able to maintain me. So there's another example we can learn from. It's not to... sometimes we present the philosophy, but what is our actual motive? Is the motive some sort of self-motivation? So subsequently, Balimraji pondered things. Well, if I give to Vamadeva, I'll lose everything. At that point, he has the choice. He could renege on his vow, or he could go forward. But he chose at that point to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore, he's glorified as somebody who surrendered everything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although he was the master of the three worlds, he surrendered everything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the choice. So his case can be contrasted with Jarasandha. Jarasandha was also defeated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But each time he was defeated, he just thought, well, Krishna won this time, but the next time I'll win, like that. And so this, repeatedly he attacked the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like, repeatedly he was defeated. So he never really came to his senses, although he had the opportunity to associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead so many times. So this is the choice always for living in need to choose whether to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead or to pursue one's own personal agenda. And as devotees, we each day in our Krishna consciousness, we also have to choose, are we going to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead today, or are we going to pursue some other agenda like this? So if we're mixed devotees, then there's a likelihood that sometime the rug will be pulled up from under our feet. So we see the kings, they fell from their royal position and they were deprived of all their wealth and opulence, and then they surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because what many people may have the rug pulled out from under their feet and may lose everything, but we see in modern life people without spiritual training, sometimes they break up with their girlfriend and then they lose their job, and then they've got all these debts on credit cards that they can't pay off. And then we hear the next thing we hear about them is they go into some public place and they start shooting people, and then it's on the news. So-and-so had some sort of breakdown in his life, and he went and killed 8 people before he shot himself. So it's not always just simply by having everything fall apart on you that one surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when everything does fall apart on you, that's a chance then to make deep surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in modern society, people don't have this knowledge. And therefore, this book distribution is very important because it gives people knowledge. People may take the books and they may read it, but they may not accept it at the time, or they may not follow it at the time. They may sort of intellectually accept, oh, this is quite interesting, this seems to be quite accurate, but they may not follow it. But at some point, they may go through some traumas, disasters in their life, and then they may turn again to that knowledge and act upon it. In Perth, we're doing the story of the Avanti Brahmana. The Avanti Brahmana is a very interesting history. He was he was brought up as a Brahmana. So it's the story of the Avanti Brahmana. Avanti in India is modern day Ujjain, I think. So he was brought up as a Brahmana, but he went into business, so he wasn't so much interested in the Brahmanical training, but he went into business. And he made some money for some time, but he was very miserly. He wouldn't spend even for his family members. So he wouldn't spend for religious purposes. He wouldn't spend to maintain his family members. He was always afraid of losing his members. He wouldn't spend for worship of demigods. He wouldn't spend in giving charity to beggars or sannyasis. He just tried to hang on to his money. So he didn't even spend it for himself. He didn't even spend it for his own sense enjoyment. So gradually, he offended everybody because he didn't worship the forefathers, he didn't worship the demigods, he didn't even provide for his family members nicely. So he managed to offend everybody. And so naturally, his fortune began to subside. Of course, if you commit offences, then your fortune diminishes. And gradually, although his best efforts to hang on to his money, his family members took it, thieves took it, he was cheated, and gradually he ended up with nothing. So he lost all his wealth and his family members rejected him. Then he began, his good quality was that he began to think very deeply about his situation. And previously he had that training as a Brahmana, and he realised that actually wealth was the cause of so many problems, that it was the cause of cheating, anger, hatred, enmity, lust, pride, greed. He became detached. Because his situation was he was totally left with nothing. He became totally detached from the true world, and he, within his mind, he surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then later on, he took Later on he took sannyasa, he renounced everything, renounced the world. And when he took sannyasa, he was given so much abuse by people, because they said, oh, previously he was a family man, his family members rejected him, and he lost all his money, and now he's taken sannyasa, so people will give him charity. Just see what a rascal he is, he's just a pretender. People would urinate even in his urinate in his begging bowl. Like, he had no good reputation in society because of his previous activities. But he accepted whatever abuse, whatever humiliation he got as simply being results of his previous activity. He didn't blame anyone, he didn't have any hatred for anyone, but he accepted it just as the results of his previous activities. And gradually his bad karmas wore off. He became intimately attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he went back home, back to Godhead like that. So Vandi Brahma is another case of somebody who gets the special mercy, which is having everything taken away from you. Srila Prabhupada, the Vandi Brahma. These kings also, they seem to be in this category, have everything taken away from them. Nalakavera and Mani Griva also, the previous, probably last month you celebrating Kartik, the pastime of Krishna, of pulling down the two Arjuna trees that were actually Nalakavera and Mani Griva. They were very wealthy sons of Kavera, but they were inclined to an indulgent life. Kavera himself is a very very miserly person. He's the treasurer of the demigods, but he's very tight with the finances. Maybe here you have a treasurer that's very tight with the finances. Kavera is very tight with the finances. But they were living very extravagantly, wine, women and song. So one time Narada Muni came with obeying naked with some young damsels. The damsels went to cover their clothes, but they couldn't even bother covering their bodies. They were naked, they saved their personal, they didn't couldn't even be bothered covering their bodies. So Narada Muni, he cursed them. You like to stand naked, therefore you stand as a tree, because a tree can stand naked and nobody bothers about it. They cursed them to become trees, but trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. So something like 100 years later, they were liberated by Lord Krishna. So during that 100 years, they had a special benediction. Normally trees are not conscious of their previous activities, but they had that special benediction, they could remember their previous activities. But again, they also had everything taken away from them, and then subsequently they were able to surrender the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So best if we can just directly surrender the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we don't have to go through so much psychological trauma, have everything taken away from them. But if we can't, and we do find ourselves in some situation where things are not going our way, things are falling apart, then we should understand there's an opportunity to surrender more deeply to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these kings may have been pious in some respect, but they had all their wealth opulence taken away. But subsequently, they were relieved by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they didn't, here in this verse, they didn't feel any hatred or bitterness towards Jayasandra. So this is a very high level of Krishna consciousness. When other people can mistreat you, and you don't feel any bitterness or hatred towards them. So this is very... Sometimes we can test ourselves. We may get mistreated. This can also be by some other devotee, or maybe a non-devotee. This can also be a test of how deep we are in our Krishna consciousness. And we can see how we're actually measuring up, how we're advancing, how we react to that. If our mind becomes saturated with thoughts of revenge and enmity, then we can understand that there's something lacking in our appreciation of the philosophy. We're hearing the philosophy, but we're not acting on a deep level. So then we have to understand... Try and understand what the causes of that are. So these kings, they didn't start some legal action, they didn't try and get revenge, but they simply took it as being surrendered to the Supreme Person of Godhead. Of course, another point on the whole idea of being kind of like mistreated by others is that even in mundane psychotherapy, they call it the victim mentality. Everybody thinks they're the victim. I'm the victim of so-and-so's mistreatment, this other person's mistreatment, like that. But nobody ever thinks they're the victimizer. So you've got a kind of logical problem that everybody thinks they're the victim of other people's misbehaviour, but nobody thinks their misbehaviour is causing anybody else any trouble like that. So you've got a kind of logical problem like that. So that's we often forget how we may hurt others by gossiping or speaking badly about them. And then we find out that somebody speaks badly about us, we feel very hurt, very disappointed, but we forget how many times we may also speak badly of others like that. Sometimes we know that people think that someone's a temple president or GBC, therefore it's open slather, we can just criticise them like that. But that person is also soul, they're trying to surrender to Krishna, they're trying to do some service, and we may feel we're pretty free to criticise them, but then later on we may find we get a leadership position and other people blow us, criticise us, not understanding our situation like that. So the victimizer, the victim thing is that there must be as many people sort of dishing out the punishment as receiving the punishment like that. So there's another way of understanding this whole point. Sometimes we look at just from the angle of karma. I must have done something in my previous lifetime, but it might even be in this lifetime we did something that we spoke ill of somebody, or we caused some difficulty to somebody, or sometimes some of us get distressed simply because we don't get our own way, isn't it? But we forget the times that we did get our own way like that. So somebody becomes distressed because sometimes it's not always sometimes not everybody can be satisfied by a particular arrangement. So somebody gets their way and somebody doesn't get their way. So we become very morose. Oh, how can I not get my way? But we forget the times we do get our way and somebody else comes out getting their way like that. So we should also try and understand things philosophy. Just like the Avanti Brahmana, he went very deeply into the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So also we should go very deeply into the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Continue to hear Bhagavatam class like that. And not go around with a victim mentality. The victim mentality is also a type of self-indulgence, isn't it? I'm the victim. Okay. That's also self-centered. So we don't want to become self-centered. We want to become Krishna-centered like that. So we have to. So like these kings, they simply push it out of their minds that Jarasandha had mistreated them. They push it out of their mind that they want to now surrender to the Supreme Person of Godhead. So similarly, we feel that we've been mistreated or unfairly criticised. We didn't get our own way. We should understand things from a higher perspective, be able to push it out of our consciousness and go deeper into our surrender to the Supreme Person of Godhead. And a very nice point that I heard Giriraj Swami making was that if we simply chant 16 rounds, follow the four regular principles, and give our life to the Krishna conscious movement, then Prabhupada has assured us we will go back home. Now the point, so we may hear this, and we may wonder if it's actually true, but the point Giriraj Swami made is that it's true because it's promised by the pure devotee, and that Krishna fulfills the promise of his pure devotee, even if he doesn't agree with the promise of his pure devotee. So the example is given that at the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Jayadratha, he killed Arjuna's son, Abhimanyu. So Arjuna then made a terrible promise. terrible in the sense, very difficult to carry out. He said, I will kill Jayadratha on the next day of the battlefield, or I will enter fire. I will commit suicide. Like that. So Krishna said, no, you shouldn't make a... he told him, yes, either do. You shouldn't make a promise like that. That'll be very hard to carry out, Krishna said. So the next day, they were fighting, and Dronacharya, he arranged the whole army for the defects of Jayadratha. Jayadratha, he wanted to quit the battlefield. He said, well, Arjuna's going to kill me today, I want to quit. But Duryodhana said, no, you've got to stay there. This will be our chance to get rid of Arjuna. If we can just protect you for one day, then Arjuna has to enter fire. So Jayadratha had been a big hero the previous day, but this day he wanted to quit. When he didn't have to fight with Arjuna, he was a big hero, but when he had to fight with Arjuna, he became coward and wanted to quit. So Dronacharya arranged a gigantic formation for the protection of Jayadratha. He had Jayadratha right at the back of the battlefield and eight auctioneering divisions in front of him. And in the very vicinity of Jayadratha was stationed six very powerful warriors, each one of which would take many hours for Arjuna to defeat in battle. So Arjuna spent many hours mowing his way through these eight auctioneering divisions. And eventually he came to the vicinity of Jayadratha. But Jayadratha was protected by these six great warriors. So Arjuna would fight with one of the great warriors, and when he started to defeat him, that warrior would desist from fighting, another one would take it up. So in this way he was going from one great warrior to the next warrior, and he wasn't getting anywhere. So he sort of turned to Krishna and looked, what am I going to do now? So then Krishna performed a mystic trick. He made the sun appear to set on the horizon. So then the six great warriors said, okay, the day's battle's finished, Arjuna must now enter fire. So they dropped their guard for a moment, and Arjuna slipped past them, and he moved closer in the direction of Jayadratha. And they were very surprised. Oh, the sun has set, the battle's meant to be over today. And the world was fighting. One fought only between sunrise and sunset. But then they noticed that the sun had reappeared above the horizon. So like this. So this was Krishna's mystic power. So then Arjuna was able to get in the vicinity of Jayadratha. And when he battled with Jayadratha, he was subsequently able to kill Jayadratha. Because Jayadratha had a benediction from his father that whoever's caused his head to fall on the ground, that person would have their own head knocked off. So Arjuna cut off Jayadratha's head, and the skull went so far as to land on his father's lap. Mm-hmm. And his father dropped the skull on the ground. So he subsequently died like that. So Krishna didn't agree with Arjuna's vrata to kill Jayadratha on the next day of battlefield, but still, because Arjuna was Krishna's pure devotee, he enabled him to carry it out. So Krishna may not agree with Srila Prabhupada's promise that if you chant 16 rounds and follow four regular principles in life, you're spreading the Krishna conscious movement. But Krishna is so fond of his devotee, has so much affection for the devotees, that he will surely carry it out like that. So even if Krishna agrees or doesn't agree with Srila Prabhupada's proposal, if we can simply chant the 16 rounds, follow the four regular principles, and give our life to spreading the Krishna conscious, we're guaranteed to go back home, back to Godhead by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
Thank you.
Okay, so up to text 10 tomorrow. Whatever parts up the slugger. Can you tell them text 10 tomorrow? So you're doing something giving class tomorrow? Okay. Something to look forward to. Okay, Gundarachan Rukavatam Ki Jai.